Morning of today's Daf and Baba Basis Kuf Lamed Vav. We start with the Mishnah today on the Daf. A Kosim Mechas Levanov, so a person is running over his assets to his children in the context of the 8th Parak. This Mishnah fits in beautifully. In that we are now discussing a person wants to give over his assets to his son before he dies, not after he dies. So it's not a nachla, this is not an estate being passed through his death, but rather it's just a simple matana, it's a simple gift. Now, if it would be really simple, so what he would then have to do is he would just simply give it to his son and be done with it. But over here in this contract that was written up, so it's a little bit more complicated with the results being a little bit more complicated. And the Mishnah says, "Akosin v'chaz levanov." So he's running over his assets to his son. So Rav Yehuda says, in order for it to be an effective kinyan, so he has to add the words "mehayom." That's going to be effective today, ulachamisa, and after I die as well, by writing both. So what is he accomplishing? So let's go right to the Rashbam. The Rashbam writes the first Rashbam on the Mishnah. So the Rashbam writes that we're talking about somebody who's healthy. He wants to marry a woman. However, he does not want the properties to be meshubah, but he doesn't want it to be encumbered to his wife. We know, of course, that when he gets married, So you know when he gets married, so of course he's going to have to write a ksuva contract to his wife, and that ksuva contract to his wife is going to obligate her money in the event of either divorce or he predeceases her. So what he's going to want to do is he's going to want to protect his property so that they don't become encumbered to his wife, because a ksuva, as we know, is a written contract, and therefore, like any written contract, so there's going to be a mortgage on his properties against the contract. So what he would like to do is he'd like to protect the properties for his children. So what does he do? So what he's going to do is as follows. So basically he's going to set it up so that his children are now the owner of the property, so he's no longer the owner of the property. At the same time, however, he still wants to enjoy the payros, he wants the dividends of the property, literally the fruit of the property, so he'll just simply write over the title to his son, but with the understanding that he's going to be able to enjoy the fruits of the property until he dies. And therefore, we come to this point in the Mishnah, which is mehayom ula achar misa. So I'm giving it to him now, and I'm giving it to after I die. Okay, what does that mean, now and after I die? Meaning now, effective immediately, he's the owner of the title, and then I'm going to enjoy the fruit, and when I die, so then he's going to obviously assume Paris as well.
So what about the ketubah?
So now the ksuva is fine, meaning the ksuva that he wrote for her is now going to be effective. Any holdings, current holdings that he has right now is going to be encumbered against the ksuva, but not that property, because the property was now given over to his son prior to his marriage. So the ksuva is not going to have a mortgage on that particular property, because that property is not his.
It cannot be an issue with the food.
What would be the problem with a straightforward case? Why do you have to involve a ksuva in this?
At this point in time, I should know already. The Rashbam over here is just constructing a scenario in which a person, what's motivating a person to not just simply gift all the property over?
Same reason. He wants to have the fruits now.
Okay, good.
And
Agreed. It could be simpler. Okay, but the Rashbam, the Rashbam is just giving us a scenario in which I totally understand that, look, in other words, it's a shelter. He's sheltering the property.
By doing that, he made the sound only in this kind of case.
Right.
But in a straightforward case, it won't work.
Okay. No, I understand. I do understand your point. But okay, the Rashbam is explaining what would motivate a person to do that.
We do that all the time.
Yeah, right.
Another. We have grantor retained interest trust. We have qualified residence trust.
Okay, it happens. I'm finishing in the Rashbam. And this is the understanding of the words mehayom. Mehayom means today you are getting now title of the property. And then, comma, next part of the Rashbam. And then after I die, you're going to again then get the peros. Now, let's say you left out the word mayom. So the Rashbam says, so now you're in trouble. Why? I say in trouble, by the way. I don't mean like actual, there's no legal trouble over here. But in other words, you're going to have a problem, because when you leave out the word mayom, so what happened now, effective immediately? Nothing. And what about la'achar mitzvah? What about after you die? So the Rashi says, well, there's just a small detail, and it's not so small. You see, after you're dead, you're no longer an owner of the property. Now, that is an obvious point, but over here, it's going to be very important. It's an obvious point, but it's an important point. Because once you're dead, and once you're no longer able to create a kinyan, so that means that this property was yours, meaning the father's, until the moment that he died. And then what it's going to do is it's going to roll to the child through Yerusha, not through Matana, not through a kinyan. And now the problem, of course, is that after he died, now his property is encumbered to his wife through the ksuva. And so now, is she going to be in a position where she can take that property? Absolutely. Meaning, even though it's no longer in his possession, but it's in his son's possession, but the son only got it through Yerusha, which means that all the liens and all the mortgages that were on the property were going to roll over to the son as well. And so therefore, obviously, the wife, the widow now, is going to be able to collect from that particular property. So the word me'ayom is an essential part of the writing of the tzuva in order to affect a title transfer effective immediately, the payrus transfer to be effective at a later point in time. Now, Divrei Rav Yehuda, this is the opinion of Rav Yehuda. We're back in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi Omer Nitzarech. Now Rav Yossi says it's not necessary. Meaning Rav Yossi says, even if I write the words, meaning the father writes the words La'achamisa, without the writing the words Me'ayom, it's going to be the same result, where the title transfer will be effective immediately, but the payrus is not going to be transferred until after he dies. Okay, now, why should that be? Meaning, it seems to be that Rav Yehuda is absolutely right. Meaning, if you want a title transfer immediately, so you need to add the word Me'ayom. What would be the reason behind Rav Yossi, where Rav Yossi says, not necessary, you just write La'achamis and that would be enough? So stay tuned, because the Gemara is going to ask that very obvious question. How come, according to Rav Yossi, you don't need to write the words Me'ayom? Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to address that question. And we kind of need to know the answer to that question. I mean, even if the halacha were not like Rav Yossi, but as we're going to see later on, the halacha falls like Rav Yossi. So we're going to have to explain, according to Rav Yossi, what happened to the word Me'ayom. How come I don't need it? Hakosev nechasov levno la'achar moso. So a person writes over his assets to his son, and it's going to be transferred la'achar moso after he dies. Ha'avin yachol limkor mimnishen ksuvin leben. So on one hand, now we're in a position where, who is the owner of the property? So the owner of the property is really unclear. So the Mishnah says that the father can't sell the property because they are written over to his son. But on the other hand, however, the son can't sell the property because they're still retained by the father. Now, what if the father sells the property? Now, I know this Mishnah sounds strange, because the Mishnah just said the father can't sell it. And then the Mishnah says, and you know, if the father sells it, the sale is a valid sale. What? What? So obviously what's meant over here in the Mishnah is that the father can't sell the title of the property, meaning the title of the property now has been transferred to the son. So since the title of the property is transferred over to the son, effective immediately, the father is not in a position where he can sell title because it's not his. What does the father have? The father has payros. So when the Mishnah says, now if the father sells, what the Mishnah means is that the father can sell rights of payros. That's what the father can sell, and that's what the Mishnah means. So once the father sells the payros, so then the payros are going to be a valid sale. Of course, until he has, as long as he can enjoy the rights of the fruit. He can't sell anything more than what he himself can gain. So as long as he's alive, he can enjoy the payros. So when selling the payros to somebody else, so...
How could he sell the rights to the payros if the Varsha...
Yep, good question. Okay, stay tuned.
So...
No, he's not selling the property, he's selling the payros. So it's the right question. So the machara av mechur machiyamos. So if he sells it, so the sale will be valid until he dies. Machara ben ein lokech bem klo machiyamos av. And then if the son sells, so what is the son selling? So he doesn't have payros, he has title. But it's a funny kind of title. It's a title to the property without the right to the fruits. So the Mishnah says, "Ein b'hem lokech b'hem klum achiyam asav." So now the sale is only going to be valid or acknowledged or binding only when the father dies, because once the father's dead, now he gets title and payros, and so therefore the sale will be a valid sale. What if the son dies before the father, after he sold it, after the son sold the title? Stay tuned, that will be a discussion in the Gemara as well. Okay, much to discuss in the Mishnah over here. The first thing we need to discuss, of course, is the wording of Mehayom al Achamisa. The Mishnah, the Gemara starts off the discussion. V'chi kasa Mehayom al Achamisa, Mehavi hatanan. Mehayom al Achamisa, gevein oget. So the Gemara says, Mehayom al Achamisa, you remember, we did this discussion, we had this discussion already. This takes us back to the Gemaras of Gittin and Kedushin, where the Gemara there discussed where a person writes a get to his wife, and he says, Mehayom al Achamisa. Now, we know as a rule, Ein get lachamisa. It's one of the most fundamental rules when it comes to gittin. Right? The Rambam opens up Hilchos Gittin with 10 basic rules regarding gittin, and one of the 10 basic rules regarding gittin is ein get lachamisa. There is no get after. There's no get, you can't give a get post mortem, meaning the death is the finality of the marriage. So if you want to try to give a get after you die, it's just simply ineffective. Even if you write it up beforehand, but if the effectiveness of the get is after you die, that's simply not going to be a get. So let's say a man writes a get to his wife and he says mehayom, the get's going to be effective, and then he says ula achamisa, and after I die as well. So that's a confusing language regarding a get. And with that confusing language, what's the consequence? The consequence is get ve'eno get. So in the event of his death, now is she a divorced woman or is she a widowed woman? Now that's important to know. In terms of her ksuva, it's really not important. She's going to get the ksuva anyway. In terms of the mitzvah of yibum, that's going to be extraordinarily important. If she was a divorced woman, there's no mitzvah of yibum. If she is a widowed woman, then there is a mitzvah of yibum. That's right. So that's a big difference. So the Mishnah says that because a husband, when writing the get and giving it to his wife, he says the words mehayom ulachamisa, so now we are in confusion. The ambiguity of the language is going to only serve as a confusion when he dies, whether or not the get's a valid get or not. The imes cholesis v'lamisi abemis. And now, at a subsequent point in time, if he dies, so is she now have a mitzvah of yibum? I don't know. If she's a widow, there's a mitzvah of yibum. If she's a divorcee, there's no mitzvah of yibum. That, again, it's a very big difference. Meaning, if she goes and marries her brother-in-law, she may be either performing a mitzvah or doing one of the most serious averos of the Torah in Arayos. It's a shesach. So what does she do? So because we're in this point of ambiguity, we don't know. So therefore, do chalitza in the event that she's a widow. Or on the other hand, don't do yibum because she may be a divorcee. So what the Gemara is bothered by is a very simple question. When using the same exact language of Me'ayom al-Achamisa, when we're by Gittin, what's the result? Ambiguity. Confusion. I don't know. Over here, there's no ambiguity. And in the discussion of the writing off of his property to his son, we say title is effective. The transfer of title is effective immediately. The consumption of Paris is going to be retained by the father until he dies. So why by Gittin is there ambiguity? And over here, by the writing over the property, is there no ambiguity? The answer actually is very simple. It's very straightforward. The Gemara spells it out. So the Gemara says, look, it's very simple. Because when a man writes this kind of language to his wife regarding a get, there it's binary. It's either it's a good get or it's not a good get. Those are the only two options. So is it or is it not? Well, he said something which was confusing. He said, Mahayom ulachamisa. Was the words ulachamisa, was it just simply a tanai? Was it just simply a condition written into the get? I want the get to be effective immediately. Obviously, because, in other words, I'm writing it right now. On the condition that I die, meaning I don't want it, I don't want the chalos, the effectiveness of it to take place immediately, on the condition that I die. But in other words, but then retroactive to the time that I wrote it. The death is just simply a condition. That's one possibility. Another possibility is no, he totally retracted from the original position. The original position is I want the get effective immediately. Nah, you know what? I changed my mind. Lachamis after I die. So when it comes to getting, the reason of the ambiguity is because there really only are two options. Either it is a get or it isn't a get. But over here, when we're talking about transfer of property, the reason why the language of Mayom al-Achamisa works is because when it comes to property, there are two aspects to property. There's the title of the property, and then there's the payers of the property. So, Gufa kane Mayom Peir al-Achamisa. So the Gemara says, exactly. So now we understand what the words Mayom al-Achamisa means. Mayom means, on the title of the property, I want to transfer it effective immediately. Wonderful. And then when it says lachamisa, meaning, and I'd like to retain the payers until after I die. Then after I die, the payers obviously are going to go to you. You being the holder of the title of the property. So the Gemara says it's really very simple. By Gittin, there are only one of two options. Either it is or it is not a good get. using the ambiguous language creates ambiguity. Over here, when it comes to the transfer of property, there actually are two aspects to the transfer, the title and the peros. So Mehayom al-Achamisa can be just simply an expression of one referring to the title and the other referring to the peros. Gemara says, so really, it's no stira whatsoever. Okay, now we turn to the position of Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi says that when the father transfers over his property to his son, he does not need to use the language Mehayom al-Achamisa. Even if he just simply says La'achamisa, that would be sufficient. That'd be enough. So Rav Yossi, says it's not necessary to write the words Mehayom. It is understood that the title transfer is effective immediately and that the peros are retained by the father until he died. Now, again, I'm just going to reiterate the question. Gemara is going to address it in just a second. And that is, why? Why do you not have to add the words Mehayom? Rav Yehuda's position seems to be the most straightforward position. That if the father wants to transfer title effective immediately but retain the dividends until he dies, you need to use the words Mehayom al-Achamisa. And Rav Yossi's position of, nah, it's okay. Just simply say al-Achamisa, we get it. Why should we get it? So the Gemara tells us the answer to this in the format of a story. Rava Baravu Chalosh, Rava Baravu gets sick, Alagabe, Ravun of Rav Nachman, and he has two Mevaker Cholim, two people who are performing the mitzvah of Biker Cholim, and Amar Le Ravun of Rav Nachman, and Rav Huna says to Rav Nachman, "Buy me alach k'Rav Yossi, oin alach k'Rav Yossi." So obviously the mitzvah of Biker Cholim, but once they're there, so they're going to be discussing Torah. That's kind of obvious. That's how we should all operate, but that's how the Amoraim operate. So he says, look, we're going to go in there, we're going to be Mevaker Chola while we're there. So let's ask him, is the halacha like Rav Yossi? Is the halacha not like Rav Yossi? In terms of, you know, in terms of just objectively, they're talking Torah, like I totally get it. In terms of like the theme of what they're talking about, hey, you know, when you're right over your assets to your kids before you die, so do you have to write the words Mehayom? And he's sick, and you know he's in bed, and he's significantly ill, and he, okay.
Couldn't you argue that he doesn't even have to Achamita because his son is going to inherit him anyway, so what's the one with Achamita?
Yeah, but again, the big difference is whether or not there's, again, going back to that Rashbam in the Mishnah.
Any kind of stipulation if his son is going to inherit?
Right, that's why that Rashbam that we did in the beginning of the shiur today is so important, because the big difference is going to be is there a shibud on the property or not? Meaning he wants to, in later life, he wants to marry again, so but he doesn't want there to be a mortgage on the property, so he's going to now want to effectively give title immediately over to his son, shelter the property from any mortgage. So good. So the Gemara says, halacha falak Rav Yossi or not? So Amalei time to Rav Yossi lo yadana halachi by mine. So he says, you know, that's a funny question. I don't even understand Rav Yossi. So you want me to go in there and say, hey, is the halacha like Rav Yossi or not? I feel so ill-informed. We're going to go in there. We're going to have a discussion. We're going to talk. And you want me to ask this question, and I get it, but I can't even articulate what's behind the reason of Rav Yossi's position. And you want me to ask me whether or not the halacha falls like him? So Amar Lei, so Rav Nachman says, well, here's what you'll do. So here we go. You first ask the question of whether the halacha falls like Rav Yossi or not, and then afterwards I'll explain to you the rationale behind Rav Yossi.
Why couldn't he answer?
The number of questions I have unanswered over here. Why couldn't he ask the question himself? Why do you only wait till after he learned the halacha to explain the rationale behind Rav Yossi? I don't know. By mine amar le'achi amar Rav halachi Rav Yossi. So they go in, they ask the question, and Rav Baravua says, I have a tradition from Rav that the halacha falls like Rav Yossi. Fine. So they got the information they wanted. The halacha falls like Rav Yossi, and now with that information, so now Rav Nachman's got to keep to his end of the bargain, which is he's got to explain the reason behind Rav Yossi. Barso denafka amar le'hainu taima de Rav Yossi da amar zmanu shashtar mochiach halav. It's an idea that we saw back in Gittin. We're seeing it now again today in today's daf. Babasu kuflam advav, and that is the shtaro shall haget. Now I use the word get over here just simply as a generic way of describing a contract, right? In other words, he wrote over the property to his son. He wrote it in a contract. So every time you write a contract, so you're going to be dating the contract. The dating of the contract is extraordinarily important. The Gemara in Gittin discusses the importance of dating a contract, really more as it relates to Gittin, but in general as well. Dating a contract is incredibly important because we know that with every contract will come a certain financial liability, financial responsibility. If we're talking about a loan, obviously the lien, the mortgage is effective immediately. And even if we're talking about the sale of the property or the gifting of the property, so there's a recourse that's created, and that recourse is going to be effective from the time of the dating of the document. So over here, so we are writing up a document, and I'm saying I'm giving you the property after I die. At the very same time, we're also dating it. Now, we're not predating it, we're not post-dating it, right? Again, the Gemara discusses also at length, and we're going to be discussing it in Baba Basra at the end of the Masechta. Meaning, when we get to the last number of days of Baba Basra, we're going to be talking about predated and post-dated documents. But we are, of course, going to be assuming that everyone's on the up and up, and the dating of the document is going to be done today. We're writing up the document today. It's dated today. So what's behind the position of Yossi is now very simple. The father is writing over his property to his son. He says that the property will be given to you after I die. But we're also dating the document as of today. This is the idea of Zmano Shoshtar Mochiach Alav, that because there's a date on the document and because it's dated today, so it means that something's happening today. Obviously. Because we're writing up the document today. And even though the language is that you're going to be getting the property after I die, lacher misasi, but still, there's a date written on the document. And the date speaks to something, and the something must be that effective immediately, you are now the title holder of the property. But the parents are going to be retained for me until I die. Tanya Nami, Ha'achi, the Gemara now is going to quote a Braisa, and not only is this a explanation given by the Amoraim, but if you look at the Braisa itself, the Braisa says the very same thing. Rabbi Yossi, Amar Netzarch, Minishas, Manoshashar, Mochiach Alav. So the Braisa actually articulates this extraordinarily clearly, that the reason behind Rabbi Yossi, where you don't have to say the words Mehayom, is because the date of the document is actually a fair substitution for the words Mehayom. Period. Baimine Rava Merav Nachman. So what if a hakna was added to this document? What are we doing now? So we're adding a wrinkle into the discussion, a detail into the discussion, and again now I turn to the Rashbam. The Rashbam over here writes as follows. So in a shtar where it was written into the shtar that we did a kinyan as well. What does he mean? So the Rashbam points out as follows. Look, sometimes when you write up a document, sometimes the document itself serves as a means of a transference. Remember, we're talking about property over here. How is property actually transferred from one party to another? So in one of three ways. Kesef, shtar, uvechazaka. So the Mishnah Kedushin says that either with money, or with a document, or with a proprietary act. Okay, we're obviously right now just talking about shtar, we're talking about a document. So sometimes the document itself is the mechanism in which property is being transferred from A to B. In this case, from father to son. So, kegon shekasav sadin esun alach lachemisa umasal osa shtar ukedekaimalan dekarka nikne bekesav abishar bechazaka. So the shtar by itself is the mechanism in which you create a kinyan. On the other hand, as we're about to discuss, and we're going to see in the next Rashbam in just a second, I'm just going to give a brief intro. On the other hand, there's also another way to formally transfer property from one party to another, and that's what's called Kinyan Siddur. Kinyan Siddur is where we do a formal action between me and you, between the seller and the buyer, or in this case, between the gifter and the giftee, where we are going to concretize that the property is being transferred. And back then, the minhag was that I would take your siddur, I would pick it up, and by doing that, we have ratified the transaction. Okay, just a short week ago when we read the Megillas Rus, so back then the minhag was they would pick up a shoe, and so the Gemara in Bava Metzia discusses. First of all, a little bit ambiguous in terms of whose shoe was it? Was it the seller or was it the buyer? But anyway, but we're right now just talking in basic principle about this idea of Kinyan Siddur. So now. Question is as follows. Let's say that there was a Kinyan Siddur in this particular transaction, and that was duly noted in the contract. So, if we have a Kinyan Siddur in this transaction, and it was noted in the contract. Question.
Why did you have to do that?
Well, you didn't have to. You didn't have to, but you did it. So now, question. Is there going to now be a debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi? Meaning, we know that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi argue in terms of whether or not you have to say Mayom or you do not have to say Mayom. Rabbi Yehuda says you have to say the words Mayom. Rabbi Yossi says you do not need to say the word Mayom because you have the date in the contract. Question. If let's say there was a Kinyan Suda that was done, and let's say that the Kinyan Suda was actually written into the document, can we now make the argument that, look, there was a Kinyan Suda? Does that not speak to the idea that there was an effective transfer of the property immediately? And even Rav Yehuda would agree to Rav Yossi that even if you didn't write the words Mayom, we're okay. Because there was a Kinyan Suda, and that was duly noted in the documentation. That's going to be the Gemara's discussion. That and the Gemara actually makes this even a little bit more complicated than where we're at right now. The Gemara says, So the first response to this question is no. Once there's a Kinyan Suda, so then there's no reason to write the word Mehayom, according to anybody. Certainly not according to Rav Yossi, not even according to Rav Yehuda, you do not need to write the word Mehayom. Rav Papi Amar Ika Aknisa Detzarech Veika Aknisa Delo Tzarech. Rav Papi says, even in this scenario, I'm going to make the following distinction. It depends in terms of how the contract was written up, under certain circumstances, as we'll see in just a moment, you're going to need, again, according to Rav Yehuda, this is all according to Rav Yehuda, you're going to have to add the words Mehayom. Let's say as follows. Let's say that the contract was written up where, in the beginning of the contract, it says that this contract is a means in which the property is going to be transferred, and then at the end of the contract, it was written into the contract, and we did a Kinyan Suda. So now, lo tzarech. There's no reason to write the words Mehayom. Because at the end of the contract, as we get to the end of the contract, we are reading now that we have done a Kinyan Suda. That Kinyan Suda is obviously speaking to the idea that something's occurring effective immediately, i.e. the transfer of the title. However, kanina mine vaknina tzarech. However, if I say kanina mine, where? In the beginning of the contract, it says that we did a Kinyan Suda. And then at the end of the contract, it says aknia mine, I'm sorry, vaknia, and let now the property be transferred over using this document as a means of creating the transaction. So then you have to write the words mehayom. Again, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So, in Rav Papi's viewpoint, it makes a difference whether or not the Kinyan Suda was written at the beginning of the document versus the end of the document. So, Rav Chanina Misura Mi'ika Mi'idi Da'ana Lo Yadana V'Safra Yadei. So, Rav Chanina says from Surah, you have got to be kidding me. This is such a detail-oriented halacha. Where we're talking about now contract law, we're talking about the question of whether or not I'm transferring my title over to the father's transferring over title to his son, whether or not he has to include the words Mehayom or he does not. Debate in the Mishnah between Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda, and then a subsequent debate whether or not if we do a Kinyan Suda and that's duly noted in the contract that we did a Kinyan Suda, whether or not we need to write the words Mehayom. And then if you're still with me, and then a further detail in this halacha in terms of whether or not you start the contract by noting the Kinyan Suda or you end the contract by noting there's a Kinyan Suda. So he says this is such a detail within a detail of a halacha, like we barely know this. Do you really think Sofrim know this? Do you think the scribes know all this? So Shalun Listifre Dabai Viade Listifre Dabai Viade. And so the Gemara says, and you know, well, we went around and we asked people and we asked the scribes of Rava, we asked the scribes of Abaye, and they know all this. And this speaks to the idea of specializing, meaning that, in other words, when you have a specialization in a particular field, so of course you'll know details in your field that the general practitioner won't know. So if you go to the scribes and say, did you know this detail? The scribes are like, yeah, of course, meaning that's what we do. We do contracts. We know this particular detail. It's important to note whether or not you're mentioning Kinyan Suda at the beginning of the contract or at the end of the contract.
Aren't there witnesses to the contract?
Agreed. But in other words, we're just discussing the contract by itself. Does it create an immediate transfer of title? Yes or no? So now, with the words Mayom, the answer, of course, is yes. Even without the words Mayom, if we are talking about a Kinyan Suda, so it depends where that Kinyan Suda is, it's actually referenced in the contract. Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua Amar Bein Aknevei Kaneinu Minei Bein Kaneinu Minei Ve'Aknei Lo Tzarech. Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua says, look, I'll tell you, my opinion is that in a contract, if there was a Kenyan student, it was noted, it doesn't really matter where it was noted within the contract, whether it was noted in the beginning of the contract or at the end of the contract. If there was a Kenyan student and it was duly noted in the contract, I know that the title was transferred effective immediately. And the only time that there's a debate in the Mishnah is where there was no Kenyan Suter reference whatsoever in the contract. Then there's a debate between Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda, where Rav Yossi says that without adding the words Mehayom, it's not effective immediately. And according to Rav Yossi, even without adding the words Mehayom, it's still going to be effective immediately for the reason we already explained, which I'm just restating, because there's a date on the contract, and why else is there a date on the contract? Finishing up this discussion, Amar Rav Kahana Amrisa L'Shmaita Kamei De Rav Zvidmei Nahardal Ava Amarlei Asan Hachim Asnitzan Lo Ane Hachim Asnitzan Lo. That's how you teach it, this is how we teach it. Amar Rava Amar Rav Nachman V'Haknar Eino Tzarech. When we do a Kinyan Seder, there is no reason, according to either Shita, neither according to Rabbi Yossi nor according to Rabbi Yehuda, there is no reason to write the words Mehayom Bein Akneh V'Kanina Mineh Bein Kanina Mineh V'Akneh Lo Tzarech. And it doesn't matter where Kinyan Seder is mentioned in the contract, in the beginning or in the end. And the only time there's a debate in the Mishnah is where the contract was written without mentioning Kinyan Seder. Okay. Period. That takes us to the first half of today's daf. Okay, moving on to part two. Part two of today's daf now goes on to the next part of the Mishnah. Next part of the Mishnah talks about what if now after the father writes over the property to his son, and it's effective immediately, either because he added the words Mehayom or according to Rav Yossi, even if he doesn't. He writes now over the title to his son, it's effective immediately. So now you have on one property, you actually have two owners. Kind of. It's kind of like a partnership where the son is now the owner of the title and the father is the owner of the rights. So somebody's owning title of the property and somebody's owning rights of the property. So who is the real owner? That's pretty much what we're going to be discussing in terms of who the real owner is. When I say real owner, I mean, who right now can sell this property? Can the son sell the property? Can the father sell the property? And you can understand that both of them have significant limitations. The son selling the property, what is he selling? He's selling title, and that's pretty good, meaning that is the property itself. But remember, the father retained the rights, the son doesn't have the rights. So he's selling really a more kind of like a concept. Right? In other words, you now, I have title, I'm selling it over to you. But just understand, as long as my father is alive, I had no rights to the property, neither do you. And you're going to have to wait till dad dies, until you get the rights. But at least you have title. On the other hand, what does the father have? Father has rights, he has usage of the property. Can dad sell that? We already learned that back in the Mishnah. Yes, he can. He can sell the rights to the property. How much is that considered a share in the property? His rights to that property. That's what we're going to be discussing right now. So, this is a classic discussion, the Gemara, as we go through the sugya. So you've been around long enough in the daf, you're going to be like, oh, I've heard this before. We've discussed this a number of times before, the distinction between being a title holder to the property versus being just simply a user of the property, having rights to the property. HaKosev nechazel v'no lachemoser idmar, marcher ben b'chaya av, umeitza av b'chaya ha'av. Let's say the son sells while the father's alive, and then the son dies while the father is still alive. Meaning, we already know from the Mishnah, if the son sells the title to the property, so the purchaser of that title now is holder of the title, and he has to wait. And then in the occasion that dad dies, now he's going to be assuming full ownership of the property, both title and obviously rights and usage of the property as well. That's clear. That's what the Mishnah taught us. Now we're going to be discussing the following. Son sold the property, and then son died before the father did. So now what? So now, as the father now become a de facto owner of the property, he retained the rights for himself. And also, by the way, just to make this a little bit more complex, please keep in mind, the father was the owner of the property. But, okay. But he transferred over the title to his son, and then the son sold that title, and then the son dies. So is now the father considered such a significant shareholder that now the father is going to be the assumptive, presumptive owner of the property, or maybe no? Maybe no. Maybe that when the son sold the title of the property, that sale was finalized. And even though the son predeceased the father, but still, the purchaser of the title still is the holder of the title. And in the event that the father dies, he's going to then assume the rights as well. So this is our discussion. Itmar, I'm starting again on the bottom line of Kufla Midvav Amar Aleph. Itmar Machra ben Bechayav, Mesa ben Bechayav. So the father sold it while the dad was alive, and then the son dies while the father was alive. Amar Rav Yochanan Lokana Lokech. So Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that the Lokech, that the purchaser, is not going to be the owner of the property. Even when dad dies, he will not become the owner of the property. Let's take a look at the top Rashbam on the Amud Beis. Even when dad dies at a later point in time, the purchaser is not going to be the owner of the property. What it's going to do is basically is that when dad dies, so the property now is going to be owned by the Yorshei Av, those who stand to inherit from the father. So now, the Rashbam goes on to say that if the son didn't sell the property, so then the son obviously is going to be the owner of the property. And if the son dies and he predeceases the father, eventually the property is going to roll into the Yorshei HaBen. But we're talking about a case where the son sold the property. You see, once the son sells the property, so he's removing himself from the property. He's no longer the title holder of the property. And you see now, the buyer of that title has such a tenuous hold on that property, so that in the event that the son dies, so his holding now is totally going to be rescinded. And now the father is going to be the owner of that property. Now, yes, that's the right question to ask, and we're going to be addressing that in the Gemara. Okay, so just as an interesting point the Rashbam made regarding the son sold it versus the son not having sold it, but we're obviously talking about a case where the son held it. The son sold it. So the buyer of that title has such a tenuous hold that if the son predeceases the father, the seller is now totally out of the picture. Why should that be? Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to address that. Reish Lakish Amar Kana Lokech. Now Reish Lakish takes a position which, again, if left to my own devices, if I had to think, which, you know, it's not often, but if I had to think, I would nod towards Reish Lakish. Meaning Reish Lakish's position is that the son has a title. The father wrote the title over to the son. So the son now selling the title, the sale is a finalized sale. That's Reish Lakish's position. And that even though the son predeceases the father, the buyer of that title is the owner of that title, and then he just simply waits until dad dies, and then he'll also have the rights as well. So Reish Lakish's position is kind of easier to defend. What is behind Rav Yochanan's position? The Gemara now goes on to explain.
Why don't we apply the hektish litmus test? Can the son make the land hektish?
I was with you, and I thought you were going to ask me about the buyer of the.
No, if the son owns the land.
I see what you're saying. Hey, right? Can he be makdish the field? Right. So.
And then the father, what happens to his
right? Right. Okay, I hear you. Okay, I don't know. Okay, so the Gemara goes like this. Rav Yochanan Amar Lo Kana Lokeach, Kinyan Peres Kinyan Aguf Dami. So Rav Yochanan says like this. As far as Rav Yochanan's position, we're going to now defend Rav Yochanan's position, and that is, look, when the father retained the usage of the land, that's what's called Kinyan Peres. Now, as far as Kinyan Peres is concerned, so like I said a couple of minutes earlier, dad is still considered a shareholder in the property. Now, I know I'm using the language of shareholder. It's not in the classic sense. In other words, when we talk about a holder of a share, it means that I own a percentage of something. Here, it's not really percentages. I do understand that. But being a holder of the peros, the fact that the father has retained rights to the usage of the land and the dividends that the land produces, he's considered now a kinyan ha-peros. He has a he has an ownership of the usage. Rav Yochanan says, his opinion is that kinyan haperis is kinyan haguf. That is such a strong ownership position in the property, it's like he is a part owner of title as well. I'm not sure if I'm expressing it really well in terms of the English language, but it's easier to just say it the way the Gemara says it. Kinyan haperis ki kinyan haguf. It's like he owns the land itself. And so so what does that mean in our context? In our context, that means that even though he wrote the title over to his son, by him retaining usage, by him retaining peros, the father now is a significant shareholder in the property. So significant that even though the son is the title holder, the son selling that title to somebody else is such a tenuous sale because the father's still a significant shareholder of that property. And yes, it's true. If dad dies, that will validate the sale. If dad dies before the son. But if the son dies before the father, since the son's holding on that property was so tenuous, so therefore, it dissolves that sale altogether. Because according to Rav Yochanan, dad's ownership of that property is so strong. Again, kinyan haperis ki kinyan haguf tami. And Reish Lakish will tell you, Amar Konek Lokeach. Reish Lakish says no. That when the son sold the title, that was a absolute sale of the title. Kinyan Peres love Kinyan Aguf Dami. And Reish Lakish's position is that when dad withheld, when he retained the Peres for himself, as far as he was concerned, all he has is rights to the property. But he's not considered a shareholder of the property. Really, it's all he has is just simply usage of the property, but he's not considered an owner of the property. The son is the owner of the property. Therefore, when the son sells title, that is a valid and finalized sale. And even if the son predeceases the father, the buyer of that title is the owner of that title. Okay. So this is a classic debate in the Gemara regarding this principle of Kinyan Peres is considered Kinyan Aguf or Lav Kinyan Aguf, Machlokes Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. In fact, this... Excellent. In other words, right. In other words, Martin, really excellent. Meaning, is this principle over here isolated to our case because the father was once an owner of the property? Perfect. So the Gemara is now going to explore that very issue. Okay, excellent segue. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, no, wait one second. This is not the first time we've heard Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish discuss this very issue. Gemara says, we've heard this before. And when I say we've heard this before, we did this back in Bar Metzia, we did this back in Gittin. This is a classic discussion throughout the Gemara. And that is, Deidmar, Mochus Adel LaParis. Let's say you sell your land, but you sell your land meaning you lease your land. You're not really selling your land. And so you're leasing it to somebody so that he now, for whatever number of years the contract states, the leaser of the property is going to be enjoying the fruit of the property. Okay, now, Rav Yochanan, Amar, Mevi Vikare. We're talking now about the mitzvah of Bikurim. The mitzvah of Bikurim is twofold. One, the mitzvah is Havas Bikurim. Havas Bikurim means that when you have fruit in Eretz Yisrael, so the first fruit of the season, you're going to take some of the first fruit of the season, specifically from the Zayin Minim, from the seventh species, and you're going to put it, and you're going to collect the first fruit, put it in a basket, bring it up to Yerushalayim, and give it to a Kohen. Put it on the Mizbech, and then give it over to a Kohen. So there's one mitzvah when it comes to the mitzvah of Bikurim, that's Havas Bikurim, bringing the Bikurim to Yerushalayim, and giving it to the Kohen. There's a second mitzvah, that's the Sefer HaChinuch counts, and that is Mikra Bikurim. There's also a parsha in the Torah that you're going to be reading. You open up to Parshas Kisavo, I think it's the 26th parak of Devarim, and you're going to be and you're going to be reading from the Psukim that the Torah says. We're familiar with the Psukim because at the Seder night, the Baal Haggadah took those Psukim and made them basically the framework of the Haggadah. Right, Arami Ovid Avi, etc., etc., etc. This is the parsha that you read when you bring the Bikurim into Yerushalayim and you put them on the Mizbeach. Now, one of the lines that you're going to be saying in Mikra Bikurim is Ha'adama Asher Nasata Li. You know, I'm taking the fruit from the land that you gave me. So in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Mikra Bikurim, so there is an element of ownership. You are declaring, I am the owner of the property of this fruit. So, if you're not the owner of the property, but you're just simply leasing the property, are you now able to take the fruit into Yerushalayim and make this declaration, Asher Nasata Li. Rav Yochanan Amar Mevi Vikari. Rav Yochanan says, yep, even though you're just leasing the land and you're not owning the land, Rav Yochanan will tell you that you're going to bring the Bikurim up and you're going to make the declaration, Adama Asher Nasata Li. Reish Lakish Amar Mevi Venu Kare. And Reish Lakish says, nope, you're not going to, you're going to bring the Bikurim, but you're not going to do the mitzvah of Mikra Bikurim. Now, it's good that the way I set it up, that these are two separate mitzvahs. Meaning, if they weren't two separate mitzvahs, one can imagine that if you're not going to read, you're not going to bring. Okay. So, you understand that they're two separate mitzvahs, and obviously, what applies to one mitzvah may not necessarily apply to the other mitzvah. So, Reish Lakish will tell you that you will... you'll bring the Bikurim, but you're not going to make the declaration of Hadama Shena Satali. Rav Yochanan Amar Mevi V'Kari Kesav Kenyan Peske Kenyan Guftami. And again, now everything is well inconsistent. Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that, look, you are the leaser of the land. You have only a right to the land. You're not the owner of the land. Rav Yochanan will say, you could check the box of, I am considered an owner. Why? Because... Pekinyan Aperis, Kekinyan Aguf. That usage of the rights is tantamount to the land itself. And Reish Lakish Amar Mevi Venu Kare, and Reish Lakish will say, no, you will read, but I'm sorry, you will bring the fruit, but you're not going to read. Kinyan Peres Lav Kekinyan Aguf Dami. And the Gemara says, and once again, it's a beautiful consistency between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. Reish Lakish will tell you that Kinyan Aperis is not tantamount to owning of the property, and therefore you are not considered the owner of the property, and therefore you can't say the words Ha Adama Shena Satali. Amalcha Rav Yochanan Afagav Dema Ama. So, I'm sorry. So what bothers the Gemara right now, meaning what should bother us? We are basically at a point where we see Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish are consistent. What bothers the Gemara now is just the necessary repetitive nature of our discussion. If we know they're already having this debate, so why do we have to go over it in our discussion as well? It seems that we know this information already, and why the need to repeat it? And Martin, this comes to your point. So the Gemara says, look, Rav Yochanan will tell you that my general position is that Kinyan Peres and Kinyan Aguf are one and the same. Or, right, that if you have rights to a land, it is tantamount to you owning the land. You are considered a significant shareholder of the property. But the Gemara says, but one can easily envision that in our case over here, think about what's happening. The father is divesting himself of his property. He clearly is trying to separate himself from the property. And not just to anybody, but to his son. So such a divestment would, at least we would think, that it would generate such a separation from the father to the son, that even Rav Yochanan, who normally says, King in Paris is King in Aguf, but in this case over here, it would be, and even though the father is still holding, retaining the rights of the fruit, but maybe Rav Yochanan in this case would say, you know what? It's really primarily the sons and not the fathers. And that's why Rav Yochanan has to repeat in our case that I maintain Kinyan Peres as Kinyan Aguf, and as long as the father retained the fruit for himself, he's considered a significant shareholder in the property. And Rav Shimon, Malakish Amar Afagav Debaam, Kinyan Peres Lav Kinyan Aguf Damei, and Reish Lakish again would say a similar line of thinking, meaning that maybe this case would have been different. I normally hold that if you just have rights to the property, you're not considered a shareholder of the property, Reish Lakish would say. But Hachetz, Rich Sakadat Chamina, Kolagabi Nafshei, again, over here, you can construct the following argument. We are, and by the way, it's not a selfish idea. We're supposed to look out for number one. We're also supposed to look out for other people as well. But we have to take care of ourselves. The pasuk says, "Va'aftal recha kamocha." You gotta like other people. You gotta love other people. You know how much you have to love them? Like as much as you love yourself. Meaning, first and foremost, you love yourself. And then you know how you take good care of yourself. That's how you should try to take care of other people as well. By the way, what I just said, it's pretty much the Ramban and Chumash. Meaning that's how he formulates "Va'aftal recha kamocha." You can't love somebody as much as you love yourself. You can't take care of somebody as much as you take care of yourself, but at least it's a goal that you should try to set for. So over here, in other words, look, the father is divesting himself from the property and giving it over to his son, but he's retaining the fruit. And what you can make the argument of is that In this case, retention of the fruit, remember, he was the owner of the property. Retention of the fruit is so strong, and he really is interested in taking care of himself and self-preservation, to the point in which, even according to Reish Lakish, the property is really still his. He's still considered a shareholder of the property. And what Reish Lakish has to now enforce and reiterate is that even in this case, once he divests himself of the title and writes title over to his son, and he's just a king in Paris, he's just a dividend owner of the property, he is not considered a shareholder of the property. So Kamash Malan. So that's what the Gemara says, is that even though we generally know the positions of Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, nevertheless, in this case, we have to reinforce the idea, because you can make arguments in this case that maybe either Rav Yochanan or even Reish Lakish would have a change of position in this case, and that's why we need a repetition of the idea in this case as well. Okay, we'll stop at the word Eisve. Tomorrow we pick it up with a new series of questions for Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Again, a classic discussion in the Gemara regarding Kinyan HaPeres.